I'm Peter Block at AHA at the annual meeting 2019 for On the Scene, and it is the end of day one, and we're doing a general wrap-up, and then we're going to do an individual ischemia wrap-up, the big blockbuster trial that's being presented. We have two important studies, I think, interesting studies. On my left, Deepak Bhak. Forgot to introduce you, Deepak.
Oh, that's
from
okay.
The Brigham and Women's. Deepak's an old friend. We do these wrap-ups together. So let's get to the chase.
Yeah.
Let's go to dapagliflozin, good heart failure drug, also good diabetic drug.
Absolutely.
Interesting trial.
Yeah, there's a lot being presented from DAPA heart failure. Today was the diabetes, no diabetes. Tomorrow, the elderly. But there's right. There's actually a lot of stuff being presented from the trial, and I think a lot more to come in the future. But basically, in terms of the message, the drug, dapagliflozin, works in heart failure patients with reduced ejection fraction with diabetes, as many were hoping and anticipating, but also, importantly, seems to work just as well in those without diabetes.
Well, we were chatting about this just a moment ago, and I said, well, this isn't a diabetic drug for people, you know, without diabetes, what's going on? It's a heart failure drug.
Yeah, so it's probably confusing to doctors out there. It's definitely a good diabetes drug. It works well in people in a secondary prevention, even primary prevention type diabetes. You know, we showed that in DECLARE with dapagliflozin. But what has been advanced now is studying the drug as a heart failure drug. And we already knew from other trials, subgroup analyses, post hoc analyses, that it reduced heart failure in people with diabetes. But what DAPA heart failure has shown is that even without diabetes, it's still reducing heart failure and even death in those people who already have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. That's amazing and says that the drug is doing something else beyond what we know it does.
Yeah, and maybe it's doing a little combination of both in people that are sort of almost diabetic. Maybe they confound the, I don't know. But it's an interesting drug, and it certainly does a great job with heart failure. And it is, I think, going forward, going to be a drug that we use more and more in cardiology rather than just diabetes.
Absolutely. I think it just points again, as a series of trials have, that as cardiologists, we really need to be on top of what's going on in diabetology. And certainly drugs like SGLT2 inhibitors have to be in our comfort zone, especially for folks focused on cardiovascular prevention.
Right.
But now even the heart failure docs, right? So it's really something that general cardiologists need to know.
There you go. I think that's critical. We need to look around a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that number one. And then there's colchicine. I mean, for God's sakes, here we are suddenly bubbling up a drug that we've had around for 190 years, right? Yeah. Not exactly, but nonetheless.
Yeah, colchicine's making a comeback.
Yes. So tell me about this colchicine trial.
Sure. So we already know colchicine's good for certain situations with pericarditis, for example, but data to support that. But what this study looked at was patients with myocardial infarction to see whether colchicine would provide some additional benefit beyond standard therapies. And it turned out as a positive trial, significant reduction in major adverse cardiovascular events and a substantial reduction. So it points to the fact, as the CANTOS trial that Dr. Rickard published some while ago with canakinumab, but it points to the fact now a second trial showing that an anti-inflammatory drug reduces major adverse cardiovascular events. That's pretty important.
Yeah, it's anti-inflammatory in a funny way, though, right? It interferes with mitosis, as I remember back from my medical school days.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And it points to the fact that we're not really sure what all pathways of inflammation might be important. You know, CANTOS was positive with canakinumab, but when methotrexate was examined, that wasn't positive. Right. So it's not that any anti-inflammatory is going to reduce cardiovascular events. Probably some of them increase cardiovascular events. So it really depends on the mechanism of action. Colchicine, you know, is a bit more of a general action. Canakinumab is very specific as a monoclonal antibody. But still, this opens up the field even further. I think there's going to be a lot of companies looking at anti-inflammatories in cardiovascular medicine.
I would agree. So should we use colchicine more and more? I mean, the outcomes here are impressive.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. It'll depend, I believe, on physicians' comfort level with using colchicine so broadly. You know, there was, as expected, more diarrhea and GI side effects with colchicine. As well, you know, the overall MACE was significantly reduced, but as far as some of the individual endpoints, they all were going in the right direction, but not significantly reduced. So, you know, I think here we want to just wait and see a little bit further. But on first glance, the data look quite strong.
I will bet you that in the next 10 years, we all in medicine look more and more at these, you know, Remember yellow bile and green bile and black bile from
right.
the Middle Ages?
Yes.
We're back there, right?
Yeah.
All these bad inflammatory molecules that are running around when we get into trouble are not good for you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Peter Libby's been telling us for years that inflammation plays a central role in atherosclerosis and atherothrombosis, and now the clinical trial data are supporting it.
And this is a wrap-up, which includes probably the blockbuster trial of this meeting, which is the ischemia trial. It's been going on for these last 10 years, right, Deepak? And everyone has been waiting for the outcome, and finally we now know the answer. The short question that ischemia asked was, if you have chronic, stable angina, should you or should you not have an intervention? And the answer is, as we would expect. Right, Deepak?
Right, I think so. And I think the interventional community has been bracing for these results for a while, prepping, prophylactically, you know, striking and so forth. And some of it's been quite unfair, though interesting and perhaps fun to watch from a distance. But the results are, you know, as expected, no significant reduction in hard events. So I don't know that that's really so surprising. I think the important message that hopefully the media are able to understand is that these aren't patients with ACS. That's the majority of what cath labs in the U.S. are doing these days as far as coronary artery disease. And worldwide, it's the supermajority of what they do that is caring for ACS in the cath lab. So it doesn't apply to those patients. It doesn't apply to the patients. You know, this happened to me just last Friday where, you know, there was a patient getting a stress test. It was very abnormal. And, you know, they asked me, can I cath the patient on that Friday? And they said, if you don't cath that patient, we're going to admit him. So that patient wasn't going to get discharged. That patient wasn't going to get randomized into ischemia. And I think it was appropriate to do that patient. Tight lesion, stented it, discharged the next day. So that sort of patient, which for the non-ACS patient, I believe is typical in U.S. cath labs these days, you know, again, wouldn't have been represented in the trial. Bunch of ischemia, a lot of symptoms.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Deepak, we sound like two interventionalists who are trying to defend our position, right? But
yeah.
The fact of the matter is, the trial didn't really look at a lot of patients that we see every day. And let me give some direct sort of inclusion criteria that I think make an important difference in this trial. Number one, if you had angina that was intolerable, you were actually thrown out of the trial. You couldn't be in the
right.
trial. Most of the patients had ischemia on, all of them had ischemia of some sort on their scans, but 15% of them did not meet the criteria for appropriate ischemia to get
right.
into the trial, but they were in the trial. Skews it a little bit toward a negative outcome. And if you had a lot of ischemia and terrible, terrible bad stuff going on, most doctors wouldn't put their patients into the trial.
Key
and
points.
So, you know, it's an important thing to look at not just the outcomes, but drilling down to find out who actually got into this trial.
That is really the key point, you know, how generalizable are the results. And, yeah, I think if you've got really mild symptoms, mild ischemia, even moderate ischemia, but, you know, mild symptoms, why would you stent that patient, right? I don't think that's the majority of interventionists in the U.S. doing that anymore. Maybe, you know, pre-Courage, there was some of that going on. I think there was. But these days, really less so. And if I could bring in another trial, the COMPLETE trial, that was a trial of ST segment elevation in mine. I don't know if people have made this connection. Maybe other people have, but in, at least in my mind, I thought this was an important fact. The COMPLETE trial revascularized the culprit lesion in STEMI patients, everybody's doing that, and then randomized to complete or culprit-only revascularization. And in that trial, there was a significant reduction in the composite of death or MI, essentially by fixing stable lesions. Yes, it's someone that came in with plaque rupture, maybe their plaque in general is a bit more angry, but the benefit was a long-term, late benefit. It wasn't an early benefit.
And it's hard outcomes.
And hard outcomes. So I was on the DSMB of that trial. So I think that it is proven from that trial that if you have a tight lesion, fixing it in that setting at least prevents myocardial infarction in the long term.
Yeah, it also is an hit ventricle because anybody that got into that trial had to be hit with an ST segment elevation MI.
Right.
That may prove to be very much like the old CAS trial from 1979. I mean, it showed that if your ventricle was hit, you didn't do as well.
That's so, right.
It's an interesting issue that we don't know all the answers to.
But my point being that in a high-risk patient with a stable, tight lesion, I actually think there is benefit.
Yeah, probably will be. I'm sure that they will look at the patients that had a lot of ischemia in the ischemia trial, ultimately, and then everyone will say, well, that's just a secondary, you know, analysis and is meaningless and so forth. I'm a little depressed, to be candid. I think the NHLBI.
What can I do to cheer you up?
You can give me the $20 million that was spent on the trial. How's that? But it was a lot of money spent on the trial, which now, 10 years later, we look back and say, still it wasn't the right trial. Right? Sort of.
Yeah, you know, that's the problem with trials, right? It's tough being a trialist myself. You know, a lot of times people ask by trials, the time it's done, you know, what did you really answer? Was it really a relevant question for today? I think it's a challenge among trials and for trialists. But for sure, in terms of what this should change in our practice, that's the million-dollar question for patients, for cardiologists, for family practitioners, internists. What do you think the bottom line is? Should anyone do anything different after this trial
I think
not?
The bottom line is if you have the clinical judgment that your patient is in trouble, has a lot of angina, and you have... You see a lot of ischemia on a scan, and you say to the patient, I think the chances are pretty good that you're going to have an infarct or something bad happening. You're going to stent that patient. That's the way it works. That's what we do today, and I think that's what we're going to do tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, I think there's a little risk. I'm glad you made the message or relayed the message in that way, because the COURAGE trial, another excellent trial, well done. You know, there were folks after the COURAGE trial just saying, oh, well, I'm not going to cath these patients that are having bad angina because COURAGE was quote-unquote negative. So sort of a misrepresentation and extrapolation of the trials that I'm afraid could happen here, too.
Yeah. Well, I think for all the cardiologists and interventionalists or whatever taking care of patients out there, which is the bottom line here, which is what this trial wanted to figure out, be careful about overextending what this trial has tried to tell you, and remember that it's patients who were, quote unquote, relatively low risk. Right. And for the low risk patients, they do pretty well with medical therapy.
Absolutely. Lifestyle intervention and medical therapy work. You know, it's not an either or. Yeah. Really, intervention, whether it's percutaneous or surgical, should be reserved for high risk patients, patients having lots of symptoms.
We're going to hear a lot about this in the press. We're going to hear a lot about it talking to our colleagues. Keep all those issues in mind.